For program information, audio, video and more, head to the RN homepage.
Hi, I'm Cameron Wilson. This is Bush Telegraph. You're on RN and Radio Australia. Today, the battle over farm animals. Do consumers have the right to see how livestock live and die? Animal activists are defying trespass laws to break into piggeries, chook sheds, shearing sheds, abattoirs, and often this is done at night. Their aim is to obtain undercover footage of livestock, and the more shocking the images, the greater the impact.
We're shining a spotlight tonight on the live cattle trade to Indonesia, because without doubt, very large numbers of Australian cattle exported there have been subjected to gross, horrible abuse.
Last year, the live cattle trade was banned for 2 months and trade resumed under strict new guidelines after footage was aired on the ABC's Four Corners program. But tonight's footage shows an abattoir worker slitting the throat of a steer without stunning it first and cutting at the animal's neck while it's still moaning.
Late today, the New South Wales food regulator suddenly closed down an abattoir after viewing video footage which it says reveals acts of gross animal mistreatment. The footage, taken secretly inside the abattoir north of Sydney, has been given exclusively to Lateline.
The raiders broke in last night. The farm manager discovered the damage when he arrived for work at 6 a.m. The Egg Corporation says the activists used battery acid and electric tools to damage equipment.
Police are being asked to investigate video footage that appears to show repeated acts of animal cruelty at a major poultry processor on the outskirts of Sydney. The video showing some workers bashing and repeatedly kicking turkeys was obtained by Animal Liberation at an Ingham's plant.
Here, a shearer cuts off part of a sheep's ear with no pain relief whatsoever. This shearer pokes his fingers into dozens of sheep's eyes.
The footage published on Peter Australia's website shows sheep being punched, stomped on, beaten on the head with hammers, and in some cases having wounds stitched. Previously, Peter has targeted the sheep industry on farmers and mulesing, and now it's got a new agenda, shearers.
There's some examples of undercover footage from livestock farms and abattoirs. That last one of them was the cruel treatment inside a shearing shed that came to light just over the last week or so, released by People for the Ethical Treatment of Animals. Today, the entire program is dedicated to the issue of farmers' rights to privacy versus the public's right to know exactly what goes on in the farms around this country. Farmers are fighting back against some of the people obtaining that footage that you heard there. They're demanding tough new laws to prosecute animal activists who enter their property illegally. Several state governments are taking up their case with draft laws that use a range of different measures to deter activists. So it's really shaping, as I said, as a battle between farmers' right to privacy versus the public's right to know. We'll get the perspective of the animal welfare campaigners in a moment, but first let's hear from a couple of farmers themselves. Brian Ahmed is a chicken farmer from Werribee in Victoria. Brian, welcome to the program. Thank you for coming in.
Good morning, Cameron.
And Sue Middleton is a pig farmer from WA. Sue, welcome to Bush Telegraph.
Thanks, Cameron.
Brian, I'll start with you. Tell us about your farm.
Well, I'm an actual egg farmer, Cameron. Bit different between a chicken farmer and egg farmer, and situated west of Melbourne in a suburb called Werribee.
Mm-hmm. How many chickens do you have?
We run around 25,000 caged chickens. We've been farming since 1969, 1970 when my father started, and have been involved in free-range caged and egg production.
You were free-range to begin with, were you?
Yes, we were in the early late 60s and early 70s. If people think back, we were all free-range when it all started.
Okay, so you're not anymore? No free-range anymore?
No, not anymore. I chose to go cage production.
Why is that?
Well, I found a lot of benefits in cage production, and I guess the mistake we've made is we haven't promoted the benefits that cage production offers to the birds. And one thing that consumer must know is that no matter whether we're caged, barn or free range, the number one priority for any farmer is the welfare of their birds.
Sue, what's your farm like?
We've got a cropping operation. We have an orchard and we also have a piggery. We employ just over 30 staff and we're based in three locations. Our piggery is a 650 sow farrow to finish operation, which means that we go right from the beginning. So the sows have their litter, we wean them out into an outdoor growing unit, which is comprised of what we call eco shelters, and the piglets grow up in a social group in their eco shelter and then go to sale.
Mm-hmm. But would you be described by many as an intensive operation?
Yeah, absolutely. That is. Most people would look at it and go, "Oh, that's a really healthy production system." The pigs get to do all of their natural behaviours. They get to forage. You know, they're in a social group. They get to feed on demand. They have all the water they need, and they're kept both warm and cool in the different seasons. But it is actually it qualifies under the policy as being an intensive piggery. And in fact, a lot of people would even call it a factory farm, which, you know, we care very much for our animals. We believe it's the way that most people, if Australians came and saw our system, they would go, that is how I actually want my animals produced.
How do you feel about the term factory farm?
Well, I think that factory farm, the way people use that term is a derogatory term. And then we actually care for all of our animals. So whilst we have 650 sows, our handlers have a personal relationship with all of our sows. So factory farm for me kind of suggests that it's an intensive system where the farmer doesn't have a personal relationship still with their animals, and that just simply doesn't describe our system.
Brian, what do you make of the term factory farm?
Yeah, I guess the concern is people perceive factory farming as a cruel method, but I see it as I said, intensive farming. We need to farm the way we are now to supply food to the growing population, but as long as the welfare of the bird is number one, I don't see a problem with it.
How often, Brian, do you question what you do, the ethics and the welfare standards around your production system?
I don't question what I do. I'm very proud of the systems we do. It's a family farm. We've been doing it for years. We know how to look after our animals. And I guess the upsetting part is we've been portrayed as an industry that just mistreats our animals, and that's the bit that's distressing.
My guests on Bush Telegraph are Brian Ahmed, an egg farmer from Werribee, Victoria, and Sue Middleton, who is a pig farmer from WA. If you've got a view on this topic, we're keeping a close eye on @RNBushTele on Twitter and also facebook.com/BushTelegraph. I'll try to work in some of your feedback and questions throughout the program. Brian, your property was recently broken into. What happened?
That's correct. A few weeks ago, we were woken up in the middle of the night. We found out they were animal activists after they were apprehended on the property. But I think the concern to me is when you're broken into in the middle of the night and you've come out onto your farm, the first thing you can thinking about is the protecting your animals and your family. So you see them as a criminal element. I don't see them as activists. And that was the last thing on our mind. So I guess that's the issue that's coming up now. We come out in the middle of the night and we're out to protect our property and our family, and I'm afraid that someone will get hurt.
To say you didn't think of them as activists, you must have thought this could be coming given what's happened around Australia in recent years.
Look, I think I knew that something like this would happen eventually. That's why we set up our farm with security and alarm systems, cameras, the whole lot. But when you're woken up in the middle of your sleep, the last thing on your mind is an activist. You just see a criminal element on your property.
What happened to the activists in this case?
Well, the police have told me that they will be charged on summons, but I'm still waiting on an update. I haven't been able to get any update on that at this stage.
Do you know if they filmed your property?
No, there was no cameras. They had their own mobiles, but the police said they had a look at their phones, and there was no actual footage, but they did have some aerial shots of the property, so it was a planned break-in. It wasn't just a random break-in.
Mm. But how concerned are you that there will be images of your property emerge on a website or in the media somewhere?
I don't have an issue with images of my property coming up on a website. We do everything according to the law. We look after our birds. My concern is if they fabricate an image and make it look worse than what it is.
How do you think they would do that?
Well, it's very easy to break into a shed and take birds out of one cage and shove them into another cage and make it look overcrowded and and things like that. So that's more my concern.
Hmm. Could activists obtain footage on your property that would appear shocking to people if shown in isolation?
Well, the other thing they can do is they can show the front of the property and then show some footage of cages from an
But could they find a bird that didn't look in good health and could be shown to your average person in Melbourne and Sydney and they might react badly?
Look, it could. There's always things. I mean, the first job of us as farmers is to get up in the morning, go through those sheds and check the health of those birds. Now, if there's a bird that's not healthy, well, they are removed because we are concerned about the health of the whole flock, not just one bird. So, I mean, I'm confident that you could walk through our shed now and not find one, but I'm not 100%. Like, you could find one that's not very healthy the next day.
Sue, you're in the pork industry. I think there's a fair argument that the egg industry and the pork industry are under the most scrutiny. Have you been raided yourself?
No, we haven't been raided. We're certainly very vigilant. We keep a real eye out for anyone who's on the property who shouldn't be here because we are aware that, you know, exactly as Brian has said, sooner or later, you will experience a raid.
You expect it to happen, do you?
Absolutely. I think anyone in this industry knows that the this is a process which is not about working with the industry. It's not about coming and working with good farmers who are doing the right thing. It's about trying to outlaw or create enough of community attention so that they can prevent animal production in the long run. So we know that it has to come to us. It's now almost become part and parcel of farming in an animal industry.
We approached several pig farmers who have had animal activists break into the property. None of them were prepared to talk at all, not even consider it, in fact. What level of anxiety is there at the moment amongst your colleagues?
No, look, I think it's probably a really good issue to hone in on because what people are feeling at the moment is a real loss of a sense of safety, that we can't run our businesses in a safe way. When you break into our farm, our house is only a couple of hundred metres from the piggery, so you're actually breaking into our home, and that's where our children are. So we actually see this as, and as Brian said, you wake up in the middle of the night, something's happening in your business, that's happening to you and it's happening in your home. And we have that real sense of a loss of a sense of safety now, and I think that is something that the people who are breaking in, they want to cause a change. You know, they're activating to cause a change, but they don't actually realise what the impact is on Australian families.
But they are actually successfully bringing about change. The Sow Stall campaign is an example of that, isn't it?
Well, I think the Sow Stall campaign is something that the industry's initiated because they thought that it's a positive change. So that's been something that the industry's worked on. They put almost $1 million a year into research, into R&D.
But it wasn't the industry that brought about change. It was really Coles supermarkets, wasn't it, saying we want Sow Stall free pork?
I think it was probably a little bit about consumer demand, which Coles was responding to. It's also about moves that are happening overseas. And then it's also about the industry responding to consumer demand and saying, we will do this. We're the only country in the world that has voluntarily moved to Sow Stall free. We're the only country in the world that you can buy pork out of our production system where you're actually getting Sow Stall free. So you're not getting that out of America, you're not getting it out of Denmark, out of the EU, and you're certainly not getting it out of Canada. So when you're eating, and you can eat an imported pig product, if you're eating processed ham or processed products in Australia, you're not getting Sow Stall free, but you are getting it from Australian pork. And the industry responded to what we saw as consumer demand, and they've done that as a voluntary system.
So just quickly, if you could for me, why do you believe the use of sow stalls is an ethical approach and a welfare-friendly approach to farming?
Well, look, there's two different types of stalls. So there's a gestation stall and then there's a farrowing stall. And so farrowing stalls for us are critical because the sow goes in there when she's about to have her piglets, and the stall actually prevents her from rolling on, or it gives the piglets room to move. And it also puts the piglet in a really safe and warm, and it's quite a nourishing environment. We call where our farrowing crates are, we actually call that the nursery because it's a beautiful harmful environment. So we actually think that that's the best way and the safest way to produce pigs. So we have, this is kind of well known in the industry, probably not well known by people outside the industry, but the highest mortality rate is actually in free range, because more pigs die in the free range system than die under a farrowing crate system.
So you, similar to Brian, you actually firmly believe that your system is a welfare-friendly system, and I guess in your view the best system. Stay with us, Sue. I want to come back to you later in the program. Sue Middleton, who's a pig farmer from WA, and Brian Armit, who's a egg farmer from Victoria. On Bush Telegraph, we're discussing this issue of the public's right to know what goes on our farms versus farmers' rights to privacy, and the public campaigning and the animal activist campaigning that's really gained in intensity in recent years that has brought about some change to the farming standards around the country. But as you've heard there are some farmers who are now saying enough's enough, and we want some kind of efforts being made to stop this from continuing to happen. A couple of different views coming here on Twitter. Emma says it's long past time for animal industries to demonstrate how good welfare is ensured and take action to weed out bad operators. I guess Emma's suggesting it should have been done by now. Melanie says activists get away with too much and take images completely out of context. You can share your views at RN Bush Telly or facebook.com/Bush Telegraph. Okay, so you've heard from the farmers there. As I said, we'll hear from them again later in the program, but let's get the campaigners' side of things. Emmanuel Dufry is Voiceless Legal Counsel. Emmanuel, welcome to the program.
Morning, Cameron.
And Chris Delforce is from a group called Aussie Farms. Chris, thanks for coming in.
Good morning.
Emmanuel, I'll start with you. Voiceless, what do you do?
So Voiceless is an independent and not-for-profit think tank. We focus on raising awareness, consumer awareness, about animal suffering in both factory farms and in the commercial kangaroo industry. These are the areas where we see in Australia the largest number of suffering. And to be clear, Voiceless is non-prescriptive. We do not advocate for a world where Australia is vegan or vegetarian. What we like to do is to focus on the cruelty inherent in factory farming, that we see as inherent based on science, and to try and educate consumers so they make animal-friendly choices.
By your definition, would Brian and Sue's farms fall into that cruel category?
It was hard to truly know how Sue's production systems operated. If Sue did use sow stalls, or what she called farrowing crates, then yes, we would call them a factory farming system, and we would consider that based on the science, which is out there and has been out there for the last three decades. That kind of production system, a sow stall system, would be by definition cruel. We would also describe Brian's battery cage system also as cruel, also based on science. Mm. I think it's pretty important to acknowledge that both of these systems of farming that have been operating in Australia over the last 40 years have been outlawed over in the EU and in a number of other countries around the world because they have been shown to be cruel by science.
Emmanuel, how do you go about campaigning? How do you try to get your message across?
So what Voiceless tries to do is present the facts, present them with scientific evidence, and to be able to try to influence law reform. And that is through engaging in discussions with politicians, with business people, with lawyers. A large part of what Voiceless does is try to create animal law and promote animal law. So it really is about trying to create meaningful change through the law.
Mm. Okay, how important is social media to your campaign?
Social media has been a really effective tool over the last couple of years, particularly to raise awareness from consumers. And so it has been a really effective means of being able to spread the message and to be able to basically display to consumers where their food comes from. For all of those consumers out there that are concerned about animal welfare and, for instance, who buy free range, they can thank an animal activist or they can thank a whistleblower from within farms for knowing what a battery cage looks like. And the same story can also be told for sow stalls, for people who know what a sow stall looks like.
Emmanuel, I'll get your view on some of the proposed legal changes in Australia in a moment, but I want to come to Chris Delforce first from Aussie Farms. Chris, you don't seem to hide the fact at all that you're anti-meat.
No, well, I suppose we're more about transparency in an industry that relies on secrecy. So we believe that if people are able to see for themselves what happens in these industries, then that will naturally lead for compassionate people to a reduction or completely cutting out meat and other animal products in their diet.
You recently set up a website in April this year that shows quite shocking, I think most people would agree, shocking images of animals on farms. Why did you set that website up?
Well, that website is that's Aussie Farms. So that's the start of our new organisation, which has come about from the success and the expanding scope of the Australian Pig Farming Campaign, which has been running for a couple of years now. And part of the Aussie Farms campaign, aside from pigs, there's also egg farming, meat chicken farming, turkey farming and duck farming. And recently we've launched a website about abattoirs. So what we focus on is actually the industry standard practices, things that the industry says are okay, and we just want to show people what those practices are, what those legal practices are, because we believe that if people actually see it for themselves, they generally won't support it.
Where do you get your images and your footage from?
All of this material is sent to us anonymously. We get the impression that there's a growing number of people around the country who are taking it upon themselves to go into these places, into these factory farms and these slaughterhouses, because that they feel that there's an injustice happening and they want to show Australia, they want to show the world exactly what's happening.
Would some of it be obtained illegally?
Absolutely, yes.
Why is that okay for you to publish?
Well, I suppose it's a question of whether it's worse to harm an animal or to jump a fence, to film someone harming an animal. We think that most people would think that the act of animal abuse is far worse than the act of simply jumping a fence.
What obligations are on you, or do you feel are on you, to show the image in its full context?
We try to, wherever we can. We put out a fair quantity of footage. A lot of the footage shows walking through the sheds, looking at cage after cage, whether it's battery cages or stall after stall in farrowing crate piggeries. We want to show the bigger picture of what these places look like on the inside, and show that it's not just a dead piglet here or there, but it's the bigger issues that sometimes footage and photos can't even convey, where it's sows being constantly confined and re-impregnated over and over again for 2 to 4 years before they're finally sent off to slaughter once their production slows.
Well, what impact, if any, do you feel you're having on the industry? I guess I'm asking, do you feel that you're being listened to by farmers, or is this a case of preaching to the converted?
I think that every time we put out more footage, we do reach more people, and social media is crucial in that, because the quantity of footage that we're putting out, it's getting a bit much for mainstream media, I think. There's a bit of fatigue going on there, but social media allows us to put all this footage out, and anyone who wants to see it for themselves now can. And before this campaign, if someone wanted to see what it was like inside a piggery or inside an egg shed, it was next to impossible, because these farmers are never actually going to let people in, or they're never going to publish material from inside these places themselves. Or if they do, they're going to show inside a shed that might have some hay for the piglets. They're not going to show inside the farrowing crates, where the sows are actually confined to these cages where they can't turn around or take more than one step forwards or backwards.
Chris, you would have heard earlier Sue talk about the anxiety in the pork industry at the moment, mm-hmm. and Brian talk about his concern that someone will get hurt, that there is genuine fear for safety here with this going on.
Yep.
Your website, it names farmers. There are photographs of some of them. It has things like a Google image of their property, the address where they operate, the phone number to get in contact with them, and links to their Facebook page in some instances. Why do you do that?
Well, I suppose that it's about naming and shaming. It's about sending a message to these farmers that if they continue with these practices, if they continue harming animals, sending animals to slaughter, generally exploiting animals, then they're going to be publicly named and shamed. We want to create this idea that what they're doing is not okay. We don't believe it's okay.
But it's within the law.
Don't believe it's okay. It is within the law, but the law throughout history has lagged behind morality. Everything Hitler did in Germany was legal. The fact that what they're doing now is legal doesn't matter, because a year from now or 10 years from now, it might not be legal. The morality of it stays the same. Sow stalls are currently legal, but there's a lot of talk about how they're unethical. And so one day they might not be legal, but the fact is that their morality stays the same.
How seriously do you consider the risk that you're putting someone's safety in danger?
Well, I think it's important to consider that animal activism is a movement about non-violence. So you're never going to get an activist going to the home of a farmer. These activists have no interest in the personal lives, in the families, or in the homes of the farmers. They're interested.
Well, you put pictures of these people up on the website. That's personal, isn't it?
It is personal in a sense that they're being named and shamed. They're being shown to the public of what they're doing. There's never any encouragement of violent tactics towards them, and it is an industry that promotes non-violence. So you're not going to get someone looking at these photos and thinking, I'm going to go and hurt this farmer. Whereas we, on the other hand, have received death threats from farmers, and we are concerned for our personal safety. But that's because farmers use violence every day. They use it against animals. They view these animals as property, so they don't think that it's violence to hurt them. But the truth is, it absolutely is violence, and we're concerned that some of that violence might be directed towards activists.
Emmanuel, quite briefly, if you could, does Voiceless condone these tactics?
Voiceless, as a think tank, does not, for instance, condone unlawful activities. We do not, for instance, commission, or we do not partake in unlawful trespass or the use of undercover video surveillance. Similarly, we do not commission third parties to do so. Voiceless is concerned about this element purely from a consumer knowledge perspective or a public knowledge perspective.
You don't commission third parties, but would you use the images or the footage if you obtained it?
Yes. So if footage was, for instance, made available on social media via Chris's group or other groups, for instance, like Animals Australia, Animal Liberation, then we would, and particularly if it's already been put out there by the media, then yes, Voiceless would use that footage because we see it as an important tool in raising consumer awareness about where their food comes from and how animals are treated in these systems.
Emmanuel Jaffrey is the legal counsel with Voiceless. You've also been hearing from Chris Delforce from Aussie Farms. You're listening to Bush Telegraph on RN and Radio Australia. Well, as I said earlier, various states are looking at introducing laws that will effectively deter animal activists from breaking into farms. New South Wales is one of the states. Its Minister for Primary Industries, Katrina Hodgkinson, is highly critical of the actions of People for the Ethical Treatment of Animals. It just recently released some film alleging animal abuse in shearing sheds and then failed to report the abuse to the RSPCA for several months. Ms. Hodgkinson is planning to amend the New South Wales Biosecurity Act, and while animal activists are not the sole target of this changed act, they will be covered by the new laws, as Ms. Hodgkinson explained to me earlier.
At the moment, if you want to go into an intensive farming operation, say a piggery or it might be a layer hen facility, you'd normally need to wash your shoes in special solution or the soles of your shoes and your hands. Quite often you'll be required to tie your hair up in a hairnet. Sometimes you're required to put on a coat or overalls as well, just to try to really effectively make sure that you're not, especially if you've come from another property onto this intensive farm, to make sure that you're not accidentally carrying a disease which is transmissible. And if you look at the case of avian influenza that we had in the central west of New South Wales last year, that sort of disease spreads really quickly. I mean, it came up on one farm and then quickly spread to a second farm. And fortunately, we were able to, the Department of Primary Industries biosecurity team was able to swoop down really quickly on that and control that. But we lost 500,000 layer hens out of just having avian influenza on two properties.
But just to be really clear, is the changes, the amendments to the Biosecurity Act, will they in any way add to that five-year penalty that can be enforced at the moment under trespass laws or surveillance?
Well,
surveillance laws?
We're currently talking with our Attorney General's Department and also our police people just looking at those penalties. There are already very strong penalties, but as we create any new piece of legislation, we do obviously need to have discussion with the Attorney General, and that is taking place as a result. So it's difficult to answer that particular question, because the final version of the legislation isn't yet finalised. But I would say that in New South Wales, we already do have very significant penalties, including that five-year jail term for people that do the wrong thing.
My guest on Bush Telegraph on here on RN is the New South Wales Minister for Primary Industries, Katrina Hodgkinson. Minister, do you think there should be a public interest test when it comes to how animal activists may have obtained footage and how that can be used?
I just don't at all. And it's so clear that it's being used for campaigns. When you look at examples like that PETA one, if it's true that that was shot sometime between, I think it was October or November last year and February or March this year, and wasn't actually provided to the authorities, or notification wasn't given to the RSPCA until the night before it aired, a couple of days ago. So that is not a serious approach to trying to protect the interests of animal welfare, in my eyes. That is trying to find a media opportunity to spread your own grubby tactics and get sympathy for your own cause.
But don't the public have the right to know if there is abuse of animals taking place on a farm or in an abattoir or any primary industries facility?
Well, that's all fine. But if you know of, if you suspect anything, you get on the phone to the RSPCA straight away. You tell them the details, where it is, what you suspect is going on. And the RSPCA will get straight out there and investigate. That is their role. That's what they do in New South Wales. They are the experts, and the same with the police as well. So anybody that suspects any suspicious activity can already do that. I actually note that Western Australian Senator Chris Back spoke up about this the other day as well, and he's looking in the federal parliament to introduce a private senator's bill covering the issue of trespass by animal activists onto farms, and I think that that's to be commended, because there is a really clear role for the Commonwealth to play here. I know that Barnaby Joyce has been particularly active in coordinating a response across different jurisdictions, and I've been working with him on that as well. But I look forward to seeing more detail from Chris Back's proposal. But
so I should say his proposal at the moment is looking at, well, there's detail to be thrashed out. It's looking at enforcing
24-hour rule.
Yeah, making sure activists hand over footage as they get it.
And that is really sensible, because if your true interest is protecting the welfare of animals, and if they are seriously under distress, why wouldn't she be letting the authorities know straight away? So I think that that is incredibly important. I mean, the other thing
that... is there an implicit concession there that this footage can be effective and that public benefit, public good can arise from this film being shot?
There is just no. The answer to that is no, because animal activist organisations are not an authority in this space. And what has happened, particularly on the piggeries that have been broken into and the illegal footage has been taken in my own electorate, is that the animals have been disturbed in the middle of the night. They've had flashlights, they had noise created around them. That makes the animals distressed, and that makes for really good footage if you're ultimate goal is to promote veganism or to put human qualities onto animals, such as the Voiceless campaign. If that's your agenda, then that footage will suit you really well.
That's Katrina Hodgkinson, who's the New South Wales Minister for Primary Industries. Chris Delforce is still with me from Aussie Farms. Chris, handing vision over within 24 hours, that sounds fair enough, doesn't it?
Well, I think there's a couple issues with that. One is that these investigations often take place over a long period of time to show that this is a recurring issue at this particular facility. For example, I won't name it, but there was a piggery a couple of years ago that received quite a lot of public attention, and that was the result of roughly a two-month-long investigation that showed different issues. So the cameras were in there for, I think, a couple of weeks, and throughout those 2 weeks there were numerous issues that were coming up. If the footage had been handed over within 24 hours, then that facility would still be operating. The owner of that facility would still be bludgeoning pigs with a sledgehammer, because the activist wouldn't have been able to gather that footage that showed that he was doing that.
Okay, now, so the argument is you have more impact sometimes by strategically holding on to evidence you uncover. Is that the basic argument here?
That's part of it, yes. But the other thing is that much of what we uncover is legal. So handing it over to the authorities is going to do nothing. They're going to do nothing with it. They're not going to publicly show it, and we're not going to be allowed to publicly show it. So it just means that those legal practices are going to be hidden, and that's what they're trying to do.
Emmanuel Giuffre, tell us what other states are planning here in Australia to offer farmers more protection, and how that follows what's happened in the United States, what's sometimes referred to as the ag-gag laws.
Yes, so in New South Wales, we've just heard from Katrina Hodgkinson stating that she would be introducing tough new laws targeting animal activists through the biosecurity framework. The details of those laws are yet to be put forward for public review. We've also had over in Victoria, Minister Peter Walsh, who's also the Agriculture Minister, state that tough new laws targeting activists would also be introduced there. In South Australia, we've had the Surveillance Devices Bill, which has been introduced in the Legislative Council. And this law seeks to do two things. First, it seeks to prohibit the use of undercover video and audio surveillance. But most alarmingly, it seeks also to prohibit the use of that footage by third parties.
How close is that to the United States model?
Yes. So ag gag laws, so literally agriculture gag laws over in the US, have sought to, again, prohibit unlawful trespass and the use of undercover video surveillance, and then preventing that footage from being made public. And that could be, for instance, by animal protection groups, but also through the media. There have been about 8 states over in the US that have successfully introduced ag gag laws. However, the vast majority of states that have tried to introduce it have failed, basically from a large opposition from a number of groups, not just animal protection groups, but civil libertarians on free speech grounds and also media groups on freedom of the press grounds.
Okay, Emmanuel Giuffre there with his explanation of some of the legal change happening in Australia and what's taken place in the US. Emmanuel's from Voiceless. Well, the world's arguably the world's best known authority on humane handling of livestock is Temple Grandin, Professor of Animal Science at Colorado State University. And she argues that farms and abattoirs should be more open about how they treat their animals and actually consider putting their own cameras into facilities to monitor animal handling. I asked her what she thought of the ag gag laws that were just described to us there in the United States.
I think it's the dumbest thing that agriculture ever did, because when that appeared in an editorial in the New York Times, it's sort of like saying we have something to hide. You know, what you should be doing when you're getting bashed is opening doors, not closing them. And there are some good things that ag has done, like Fair Oaks Dairy Farm and Pig Adventure, where the public can come in and see a real pig farm and see a real big dairy.
Have the ag gag laws actually had any effect? Have they diminished the amount of covert filming that animal activists have been able to do?
They seem to still get plenty of bad videos.
So what role have those videos played, that covert filming played, in exposing livestock
suffering? Well, I have a saying, heat softens steel. And one of those dairy videos, about 5 years ago, the famous Westland Hallmark video, that caused was one of the factors that got the USDA to get a lot more strict on Humane Slaughter Act enforcement. People get shocked by these videos.
So they're effective?
They are, and there was some really bad stuff going on. Some of the worst stuff going on, actually, has been in dairy.
Do you think the meat industry or agriculture has an inherent right to privacy around how it treats animals?
Not on basic things. There are some obvious commercial secrets like supplier lists, market price information, things like that, that's confidential. But basic things like how you raise cattle or pigs and how you slaughter them, that's not private information.
I guess shock tactics do prove effective, though. Do you think sometimes, or how effective do you think they are in leading to improvements in animal welfare standards?
Well, as I said, heat softens steel. And then people can make good change. Now, we have to make sure that we make good change, and not stupid, bad change that just makes things worse.
So what has the attitude been in agriculture and meat processing facilities to this push, this idea of installing their own cameras so people can see for themselves?
Well, the meat industry's actually improved a whole lot. You know, but only in the last couple of years has the USDA started putting web pages up about violations. Well, if that web page had existed 10 years ago, it would have had 5 times more violations on it.
What is the key, though, to making, if you are to install cameras, what needs to be in place, what regulation or auditing needs to be in place to make sure that the surveillance actually leads to an improvement in standards?
Some of the most effective stuff has been large customers auditing their suppliers. And I think that's true for food. I think the clothing industry's got to go and clean up their act. I mean, they've had factories burn down and they've had factories fall down and kill 1,000 people. That's way worse than the meat industry. It makes the meat industry look like a saint. But what causes some of the biggest change is when large buyers that control a big portion of the market come in and start cleaning things up and insisting on some stamps.
Isn't that sometimes that action prompted by animal activists and the footage they release?
It's either prompted by activists or it's prompted by some big disaster. Like, in the early 90s, we had a food poisoning, so-called jack-in-the-box incident where people were poisoned by hamburger, and that triggered a lot of food safety stuff. So, yeah, activists can prompt change, but also something bad happens, like a factory falling down and killing 1,000 people. That's going to force a lot of retailers to clean up their supply chain for clothing.
In Australia at the moment, we've got some state governments looking at using tougher biosecurity laws to crack down on people generally entering farms uninvited, and in particular animal activists. How serious do you think biosecurity breaches are as a genuine threat to be cited as a justification for a crackdown?
Well, there's some things where there's where biosecurity is really important. You don't want to go on from pig farm to pig farm. That could spread disease around. If an activist came in from a city in Sydney and he went to one farm, there'd be no biosecurity issue whatsoever. But if they went to 5 different pig farms in a row, that would definitely be a biosecurity issue, and they could spread PERS and other, bad diseases around.
The other area of debate at the moment is the federal government looking at trying to place an obligation on animal activists to release footage quickly after obtaining it if they do detect cruelty or a welfare breach. What are your thoughts on that?
Oh, I agree with that, and there's a lot of people are doing that same kind of legislation here. In other words, if somebody's in there working undercover and they see somebody abusing animals, it needs to get reported right away, and I totally agree with that.
Is that a better approach in your view than the so-called ag gag laws?
Oh, that's a much better approach than ag gag laws. Much, much better approach.
Why is that?
Well, the thing about ag gag laws is it's like telling the public you're guilty. We've got something to hide, so we're shutting the door. And I think places like Pig Adventure and the Fair Oaks Dairy Farm that are outside of Chicago that are open to the public, that's taking the right approach. Okay, here's a big dairy. We're taking school kids on tours there. The pig farm, there is a biosecurity issue, so they can't actually let people go inside the farm. But the whole end of the farm is made out of glass, so the public can see everything without having a biosecurity issue.
They've actually gone to that extent of having a glass.
Oh, yes, they have.
Have you heard of many other?
And this is just a private individual that owns these farms that's done this, a very, very forward-thinking person. And we need to be doing more things like this.
Can you see a time where more producers will do that, invest in that kind of public viewing area for a farming operation?
Well, you're getting more interest in ag tourism. There's getting to be more interest there. But I think when you're getting bashed, you need to be opening the door, not shutting. Another way that farmers could do it really easily is just put a webcam up and put it out to a web page. There's no biosecurity issue over the Internet.
Just stream it live as it happens.
Yeah, stream it live. In fact, you can actually go to the J.S. West Chicken Cam in the United States. It's a live cam looking into chickens. I think you'll find it boring right now because it's nighttime here and they're all going to be asleep. So I'd recommend tuning into it when it's the daytime.
So it's Temple Grandin speaking to me from the United States, Professor of Animal Science at Colorado State University and probably the world's best known authority on humane handling of livestock. Lots of your views coming in on social media at the moment, at RN Bush Telly. Here's just an example of some. Anne Britton, who I'm assuming he's a farmer. We are asked to be transparent, but what accountability have activists got? Elena Nolan says, so the industry now is in need of advice on how to react to animal welfare campaigns. Well, here's some. Change. Thriving Regions says proof of good practice by producers on social media will not deter AA, which I assume means animal activists, but can debunk cruelty myths for a wider audience. I'm trying to keep up with all your views coming in at RN Bush Telly or facebook.com/bushtelegraph. A lot of them coming in. I'll try to stay across them. There's no doubt that social media has been a powerful tool for animal activists. There are thousands of YouTube clips that show what goes on in intensive farming and special websites, as we've heard earlier, devoted to the topic. Here's a taste of how some activists get their message across.
This is not a farm. This is an animal factory. It's an animal prison. These animals are literally being treated like production units, not living beings. If you keep kept a dog like this, you would be prosecuted for cruelty. Instead, these animals who feel fear and pain in the same way aren't protected by our laws. This can never be justified. We have legalised animal cruelty in this country.
This facility represents what gestation crate confinement is. Open wounds, pressure sores, infections, bleeding gums from biting the bars so much, and these animals aren't even being cared for with individualized veterinary attention. Regardless of how the system is managed, these pigs are barely able to move even an inch their entire lives.
She can't stretch her wings. She can't go outside or feel the sun on her back. One of a hen's most fundamental desires is to build a nest and lay her eggs in private. But in factory farms, they are forced to eat, sleep, and lay their eggs in a crowded cage.
Perhaps you already know that most laying hens in this country, in fact some 11 million, spend their entire lives in cages so small that they can't even spread their wings. Most have their beaks cut to stop them pecking each other. They cut through nerves, so it's like having the tops of your fingers chopped off, and it's done without painkillers.
Imagine living your life in a cell, a barren pen. Imagine no escape, no exercise, no stimulation. Hour after hour, day after day, year after year.
There's a taste of how social media is being used as a weapon by animal activists. Many of those YouTube clips were from the Animals Australia group. Tom Whitty joins me now. Tom's Communications Director with the Victorian Farmers Federation. Tom, have farmers been losing this PR battle?
No, I don't think they've lost the PR war. I think it's been hijacked. Farmers, I think, need to reclaim the space and actually start telling more and more the actual positive human story of producing food and fibre.
But how damaging, in your view, has the release of undercover footage been to the industries affected?
I think it's damaging from a perspective that it highlights a security risk to their own farm and their property. It's highlighting an issue, correct. And I think I do agree more with Temple Grandin on farmers being more open and transparent. Absolutely.
Is that where the Australian industry has failed?
I don't know if it's failed, but I think we need to be more open and transparent so that we can actually allow the public to get greater access into seeing how food is produced so that we actually prevent something like Brian's farm being invaded and like future farmers' properties and homes being invaded.
Mm. But Temple Grandin referred to Pig Adventure and Fair Oaks Dairy there as these leading examples of transparency in farming. Are there Australian examples of farmers that are, say, streaming their operation on the web or having an open door policy for people?
Look, I'm not sure about online activities, but there certainly we used to have something called Farm Day where we could get farmers would invite people from the city to come onto the farm, and that's something that has gone under. So we need to have a bit more of a focus on that. But I also think with social media, farmers are using it. In the last few years, they have leaped on board. Yes, if you look at hashtags such as Farmers for Animal Welfare or tweets from the tractor cab, you can see them really rallying their own troops to actually speak more honestly and plainly and upload images and videos about what they do every day.
And now there was a group called AgChatOz on Twitter that you're involved with starting up. Tell me how that works.
Well, the idea was that there wasn't enough focus at all in actually communicating that message of how food gets from paddock to plate. There is an absolute saturation sometimes in the media and through activist groups about how food is produced. Social media gives, you know, people that power to be heard and to communicate this real and open story.
So, but what is the message you believe that farmers need to get across?
That they are human beings that produce world-leading food, that they look after their animals and that they need to actually show how they do that.
Do they need to consider that maybe community attitudes are changing and perhaps some of them are now out of step with what the public demands?
Look, I think they just need to tell the truth. They need to not hide anything, and I don't think that they are hiding. I think they need to be more open and transparent about showing it and having a story and an open dialogue. Invite them onto the farm and actually have a conversation. But if there is a hidden agenda, such as pushing, you know, a vegan attitude or an idea that we want to end farming altogether, well, then we're clearly not going to get along and we're not going to be able to have a conversation that goes anywhere meaningful.
If transparency is important, is there a danger that farm protection laws that the states are looking at and that Senator Chris Back is exploring as well, that they could actually backfire?
Look, they could, but where's the line going to be drawn between opening a farm or having a farm invaded? farmers need to take it on themselves to be proactive and take that first step in leading the way and hope that state and national laws will follow that way as well. But we absolutely, farmers can and they are working with reasonable and reputable welfare groups, and we need to make a big distinction between animal welfare and animal rights.
But there would be, I'd be fairly certain that there are Victorian Farmers Federation members that support this push by politicians, some politicians, to make it harder for activists to get onto their property and film.
Yeah, absolutely. They want their homes protected, they want their farms protected. And
there's got to be some risk, though, that through supporting that, they look like they've got something to hide.
I don't think the word ag gag is the right way to actually put forward what it's called. It's about farm protection, and it's farm protection of farm and home protection. The word ag gag, I just don't think sums up what it's actually meant to be about. It's not protecting or hiding something. It's about letting someone know what goes on the farm and being really transparent about that.
That's Tom Whitty, who's the Communications Director with the Victorian Farmers Federation. Brian Ahmed is still with me, as is Sue Middleton, Brian being the egg farmer in Victoria, Sue the pig farmer from WA. Brian, would you consider something like installing cameras on your property that stream to the web?
Well, we've got all the cameras installed already, so they're for protection. But, I mean, we don't have an issue streaming them onto the web and letting people understand what cage farming's about. It's not about cruelty. It's about looking after the birds. And we've always said it's farm management that determines welfare. It's not production systems.
Is that the sort of thing you personally and you as an egg industry perhaps need to explore so that you take back some of the control in the public debate?
Yeah, I think we understand we haven't done enough positive work about our production systems, and we need to get that message across. But I also like to say that the image that's been portrayed by these groups isn't a normal farming practices. It's just not what happens out there in family farms.
Is there any danger, though, the same question I put to Tom, that maybe public sentiment is shifting and what you do is not considered okay anymore?
Yeah, we understand that the consumer is changing, and our industry has changed over the last 10 years to produce a lot more free range than we did, say, 10 years ago. But there's still a very big majority of people that buy caged eggs. They probably don't make as much noise as these groups, but there is a big demand out there for caged eggs.
So,
well,
by the fact that the product is in demand, to you, that's endorsement, isn't
it? That's correct.
Do you feel the industry's been slow to respond, though?
Yeah, I do. I think we've been too reactive instead of being proactive, and we understand that now, but it's going to take some time, and we're going to be working at it.
So we've heard a lot today about the pig industry. What do you think, if anything, can be done to restore the reputation of the industry?
Oh, look, I think probably so the types of stuff that Brian's talked about, we've got an open door policy. So if you come to us and you want to look at our piggery, you're able to. We take tours through our piggery. Everyone who looks at our piggery says, wow, this is fantastic, and, you know, this is exactly the kind of production system that I want to be able to purchase, you know, food for my family from.
But so the criticism of that approach is that it allows you to put a false reality forward, if you like. You know people are coming, you know the times to clean things up, and it's what goes on when no one's watching that is the problem.
Yeah, look, certainly. And the issue of when no one's watching, in terms of the way the piggery runs, is it's the same process as every day. The standard operating procedures in our piggery are followed the same every day. We do pull, for example, a dead pig out of our piggery every day, because that's what happens in piggeries. In any production system, you do get dead animals. So if you come on a tour on a Tuesday, it happens on a Tuesday. If you come on a tour on a Friday, it happens on a Friday. So you see what a pig production system is, and you actually need to understand that there is a whole range of things that happen in pig production. I think the guy from Aussie Farms said, you know, if we send animals to slaughter, then we're going to be named and shamed. Well, we produce pigs for a production system, and the pigs go to market. So if we're going to be named and shamed for doing what we do and doing it well and looking after good, healthy, happy animals, then so be it. We're going to have to be named and shamed, because that is a good production system. And I'm proud, in the same way Brian said this, I'm proud to produce our animals that way, and I'm proud for anyone to come and see our animals as well. If you come into our farrowing shed, you're going to have to shower in and shower out because of the biosecurity risks.
But as Temple Grandin alluded to or pointed out, there are ways around that, whether that's streaming footage online or even constructing a facility that is open, open to the public to see without entering the property. Is that the sort of thing Australian farmers Are they at that stage? Are they considering these sort of things?
Well, no, because you're running a business, and part of running your business to date hasn't been that you need to take people through your business, you know, like a on an ongoing kind of a you know, a tourism kind of a facility. We would have to completely restructure and change our operation to do that. That's not been something that Australian farmers have done in the past. If that's something we have to do in the future, then, you know, it's something that certainly the industry needs to look at. But at this point in time, I emphasise this, you can come on to Australian piggeries. We just need to organise your visit, because we can't just let you come on with because of the biosecurity risks. We're quite happy to bring you on, though, and we're quite happy for you to shower in and shower out. And we're quite happy to do that on any day of the week. You know, 365 days of the year, if you want to do it, we're happy for you to come and have a look. We want people to understand pig production.
Sue, look, thank you for taking so much time today to join us for the program. Sue Middleton, who's a pig farmer from WA. Brian, my thanks to you as well. Brian Ahmed, an egg farmer in Victoria. Also, Emmanuel Jeffrey, the legal counsel for Voiceless, and Chris Delforce from Aussie Farms. My thanks to them, and Tom Whitty from the Victorian Farmers Federation. Lots of comments still coming through at RN Bush Telly on Twitter and facebook.com/bushtelegraph. Keep the discussion going. A lot for farmers, a lot of sympathy for farmers, also some criticism coming in as well. So keep doing that throughout the day. You're on RN.
The majority of the people of Israel do accept the notion of a Palestinian state, but we suspect that most Palestinians don't accept the notion of a Jewish state.
Israel has never recognized what the Palestinians have recognized for Israel, which is their right of national self-determination.
The only resolution is for the aspirations of both sides to be met through two states, where Israelis and Palestinians...
A history of the two-state solution. You can download or stream this revision from the RN website.